Hello and welcome to the latest EG Property Podcast. I'm your host, EG Editor, Sam McClary. Last week, EG revealed exclusive figures that provided the most comprehensive view of retail real estate ownership in the UK. Using Radius Data Exchange, we were able to show that more than 900 million square foot of retail in the UK is ultimately owned by you and I, be that through local authority ownership, pension funds, or private investments. But recently, government measures have placed the cost of the shutdown of retail caused by the coronavirus pandemic almost wholly at the feet of landlords. It's a measure that could do untold damage to our high streets, towns and cities, a time when they really need investment. In this podcast, I'm joined by a quartet of industry leaders to talk about enabling a viable future for our towns and cities, about making sure that industry, politicians and Joe Public are all speaking the same language. And ultimately, I guess we talk about balance, survival and coming out of this better. So, over the next 20 minutes or so, you'll hear from Chris Grigg, Chief Executive of British Land, Bill Hughes, Head of Real Assets at Legal & General Investment Management and Chair of the Property Industry Alliance, Melanie Leach, Chief Executive of the British Property Federation, and Vivian King, Chief Executive of Revo. And we'll be talking about the roles that both real estate and government have to play in ensuring that the UK comes out of COVID-19 with the best chance of economic recovery. I've always thought that real estate is quite a simple business, but as EG's Radius data reveals, its makeup is anything but. Now, a mild disclaimer before we get right into it. The following conversation was recorded via Teams, so while the audio quality may not be up to the standard you've come to expect from the trusty EG podcast studio, I can promise you the content quality will be. So let's jump straight in. Here's Chris Grigg telling us how British Land is trying to make sure that while landlords may traditionally be the least visible of stakeholders in our communities, they are most definitely among the most important.
Well, I think the first thing that the industry has been trying to do is make the case, to talk to government, to make sure government understands. And we feel like we've had a good list, you know, that government has listened. On the other hand, when you look at some of the outturn in terms of what we're talking about today, it's not ideal for the industry. And I think that will have consequences. But we've got to keep on making the case and we've got to keep on making sure that the points, which are really important points about who owns real estate, particularly retail real estate, and what the consequences of not having that sector vibrant could be for the future.
Thank you. Vivian, for you, is that something that you concur with?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. I think we need a bit of a reputation campaign, really. A place to start is just to be demonstrating the role that commercial real estate plays in our towns and cities beyond the significant investments that's made. I mean, since 2008, $112 billion invested in retail alone in our towns and cities. But it goes beyond that because it enables spend, it enables consumer spend. 300,000 shops odd in our towns and cities, 7,000 high streets in Great Britain, with 60% of the British population living around them. And so thriving towns and cities are what we need for a thriving nation. And I think it's very important that we don't forget the social value contribution that commercial real estate plays in its investment in towns and cities. The retail-led generation is what, of course, comes to mind, with the job creation and the improved quality of life and really a sense of pride that's created in local communities. And I think these are things that speak to the public and speak to government because they're things that they can see around them, they live with and they understand. So certainly building on the work that we've been doing to create a real campaign for our reputation, I think, is an important next step.
Bill, L&G works very closely with government. You invest in a lot of towns and cities. Do you think that the government does understand the role that real estate plays in the future and the prosperity of our towns and cities and villages?
Sam, I think the answer to that is it depends. It's selective. So there are definitely pockets of the private sector that want to work with the public sector, and that's definitely much very much one of our strengths. But in the public sector, there are locations where you've got entrenched, backward-looking politicians and advisors who really don't present any sensible way of staying open for business. But the opposite is also true. There's a number of cities and towns we've invested in around the UK where there's progressive behaviour. There's a real recognition that the private sector and the public sector need to work together. And ultimately, as your research points out, the capital that's being invested from the public sector alongside the private sector has got an aligned interest. So yeah, I'm pretty excited when it works, but there's still a lot of individuals and players here who've got their head in the sand, and we have not yet profiled where the capital truly comes from, because most of the time, and in large part, it's the man on the street, and it's the built environment really that should be capable of being vibrant and productive alongside where the capital actually comes from.
Thanks. And Melanie, you're speaking to government probably almost on a daily basis at the moment.
That's for sure true. More than once a day in many different topics.
Are you encouraged by the conversations that you're having at the moment, or are you frustrated?
Well, I think you have to set them in context, don't you? You have to look at the scale of what's happened to us over the last few weeks and the scale of the government's response and start from there. I guess to the points that have already been made, I'm encouraged that, you know, those conversations that we're having with government are happening so frequently on such a wide range of issues, which suggests that the government does understand how important we are to many of the issues that they are grappling with and that will be fundamental to bringing us through coronavirus and whatever the next phases will look like, hopefully to ultimately when we can all go back to whatever normal was, or go forward to whatever the new normal proves to be. I guess in terms of the reputational piece, our research, the populist research, showed that by and large our economic impact and contribution is well understood, our social impact much less so, which is what our Redefining Real Estate campaign at the BPF was all about, trying to change that perception. And we will never have a better opportunity, I think, to demonstrate our social value. And if I look at what our members and what's happening across the industry in terms of supporting the NHS, with making accommodation available, car parking available to key workers, the many different ways in which our members are supporting their local communities, I think we're rising to that challenge, and we need to make sure that, you know, it's crudely landlords that get the credit for all the good work that they're doing, given that we don't quite often have the consumer-facing brands that other sectors and other companies have behind them. So I'm encouraged that we're doing what we should be doing as an industry. I'm encouraged that the government understands how important we are and how fundamental we are to bringing as many people through this as we can, businesses surviving and so on. But I think there's more work to be done to translate that into tangible measures that will make a real difference to our industry's ability to be part of that solution, to maximise the contribution that we can make.
Sure. And let's talk about some of those solutions. What is it that the landlords can do, or that government and the whole sort of cycle of real estate can and should be doing to make sure that everyone equally is involved in the recovery of the economy of our towns and cities? Chris, any ideas from you?
Yes, so I think there are a couple of things that come to mind. Clearly what we're going to need, amongst other things, for this recovery, this bounce forward, as you call it, is going to be more investment in town centres and city centres, because usages are going to have to change. The truth of the matter is that there won't be as many shops 12, 24 months out. You just look at how much shopping is going online. So what that means is that we're going to need to change use. In some cases, we're just going to have to improve in some cases. And so new investment's going to be really critical. I think the government, both local and central, can make a real difference by helping that process to happen. That's going to mean, in our view, some changes to the planning system, particularly probably some relaxations of, for example, you know, how long planning permissions last, something as simple as that, some of the speed with which the technical stuff like sills need to be paid. All those sorts of things are going to have to happen, and happen quickly, if we're going to get the economies in towns and cities going again.
Is there a fear that the moratoriums that have been put in place by government might impact the attractiveness of UK real estate, UK retail as an investment? Mel, is that something that you're talking about at all?
It is. So I've been talking to the Department for International Trade and Lord Grimstone, who's the fairly newly appointed investment minister, about this. I mean, there is a, as you said right at the start, at heart, real estate is quite a simple industry. It relies on, you know, the principle that you invest capital in an asset, or whether debt or equity. And you do that because you want to generate a return from it in the form of income, which a tenant pays to you. That's a really simple model, and that's, you know, a compelling model that's worked really well from everybody from, you know, billion-pound global funds and investors through to individuals who've invested their life savings, you know, in a single property that they hope will give them a secure income in their retirement. Moratoriums, you know, sort of marched coach and horses through the middle of that, really, by the government signalling it wants to legislate, you know, to take away any rights that the landlord might have to make sure that that rental liability can be enforced if necessary. So we're extremely concerned about the impact that might have and the signal that sends to investors about the security of the asset that they are considering investing in, and the political risk that that imports on top of all the other risks that investors have to consider. And that's particularly important to Chris's point, I think, when you think about the investment that's going to need to happen in our town and city centres across the country, because by and large, that's equity rather than debt investment. That's people who are prepared to take significant amounts of risk. But if you damage their view of that risk, and if you load additional risk into that, then there's a real threat, I think, to our ability to track the scale of investment we're going to need, because it's not going to come from the public sector, because the government's, you know, invested so much already in support packages. So it's going to have to come from the private sector. We should be doing everything we can to protect the attractiveness of UK real estate as an investment class and not undermine it.
But Bill, is that something that you think about a lot, both as with your LNG hat on and as the PIA chair?
Yes, I do, Sam. I'm pretty worried by the policy decisions that have been made by government to date, which are entirely lopsided and are all about protecting the tenant. The truth of the matter is the tenant protections that have been put in place in the form of moratorium or voiding of conventional means are really only protecting the tenants from what I would consider to be aggressive bad behaviour, which only really happens from a very small number of owners, sometimes for legitimate reasons and very very much a small part of what's going on here. So the big picture is if the government fails to produce something that is more balanced now, and that could be to do with policy framework changes, or it could be to do with signalling, then there is a worry I have that the case for investors, long-term investors, to invest in the built environment of the UK is undermined, and the expectation of receiving a return for a given level of risk gets put out of kilter, because the risks associated with being an investor are materially higher. Now, the government will say that the measures that are being put in place are for a short term and for exceptional reasons under exceptional circumstances. But to date, they have failed to provide balancing statements or balancing measures that take into account the role that investors and our underlying investors, being pensions, funds, savers from the UK, it's failed to take into account the fact that there are requirements, needs and support required there too.
So what could we do to balance that? What should we be taking to government to say, let's get this balance right?
Well, there's a reasonable amount of work gone into this, which I know you've mentioned in some of the things you've written, Sam, with regard to a genuine approach taken in other European countries to share the pain across owners and occupiers and government, where the concept of furloughed space comes into consideration, and somehow you figure out how the pain can be shared rather than load all of that onto the owners of real estate, which is what's happened in the UK to date. given the situation that we now find ourselves in the UK, at the very least, the government need to provide some very clear directions with regard to what is expected from tenants, that their obligations remain unchanged, that bad behaviour will be called out and not be tolerated, and that there's an expectation of a minimum code of conduct from tenants so that they behave properly. The thing that I want to get out of this more than anything, though, is a transparent conversation between owners and occupiers of real estate so that they can work together on an aligned basis to deliver success alongside each other. And again, the government regime to date has, if anything, reduced the need for tenants to talk to the owners of the real estate they occupy. And that's really unhelpful.
And I guess, Chris, that must ring true for you as well. It feels like maybe if there is less of a reason for tenants to speak to their landlords at the moment, that feels like we're going backwards. It felt like we had made some great steps forward in communication between owner, occupier, landlord, customer, whatever terminology we use these days.
I completely agree with you, Sam. I think it will drive some behaviours that I thought, you know, were behind us. Clearly, the behaviour of a relatively small group has impacted all of us as landlords. I completely agree also with what Bill said. The only thing I would add is I think that it's really absolutely incumbent on government to make it clear, and really clear, that the changes, the moratorium, are very temporary. Because when you talk about the impact that these things have on international sentiment, international investment, which surely we're going to need in the UK, then any sense from those investors that this is a medium-term issue and that's what landlords are going to have to deal with in the medium term will really reduce investment. It'll really reduce enthusiasm for the UK. And at a time when government is having to invest, spend so much money, that can't be a good thing for UK PLC.
Mm. And Vivian, we were talking before we went online with this about some of your members who have been, you know, sort of impacted really, really hard by this, and you know, almost at a point where they think, oh, I don't know if I can do it again. So we do need some balance and encouragement for the owner side of the equation, don't we?
Yes, we do. I mean, there are some of our members who are seeing their life's work disappearing, and it's a soul-destroying situation for them. I absolutely agree with Chris and Bill that there's a very clear message needs to be communicated from government, really about who the moratorium was intended to protect. And I think there's potential work to be done there in refining it at the point at which it comes through into legislation, so it does just what government intended and it doesn't do what it didn't intend. I do also think that we need to recapture the collaborative nature of the relationship between owners and occupiers that we have seen a lot of success with over the last 5 or 10 years, because at the end of the day, we have an issue that's affecting the sector. It's not affecting one party or another party. It's affecting the entire sector. There was the impetus for that in any event in relation to the progress of online, and this has just accelerated it. So I would hope that we would make the most of the situation, and we would actually put our differences aside and come together to collaborate in order to find the best way forward. It's something that we're working on at Revo to start to develop a code of conduct that's actually a code of conduct between owners and occupiers on the way to work together. And that will require some compromises on both parts, and it will require some transformational change in the way we're accustomed to dealing. But if we want to have a future, then we need to be prepared for radical steps.
I think there's a good, really good point there, Vivian, that, you know, we do have to be prepared to be radical and to take those steps together. I think it would be really upsetting if out of this crisis we as an industry move further apart, whereas we should be learning from the crisis to do better. And if we were getting closer and collaborating more, that was a word that I used to write a lot in EG, and however I feel about that word, I'd still like to write about it, because we should be teaming up so that we can really showcase how important the built environment is to the economy, to the success of the UK. I guess just to round us up, we've got about 10 minutes left. It would be really interesting to hear from all of you just the role that you think the industry can and should play in the future of securing the UK as a place where people do want to invest, as a place where the individual wants to go and utilize the built environment, be that to shop, to live, work or play. How do we as individuals, as businesses, make sure that we can create that future? Long question, but I'm going to start with you, Melanie.
I think it's really simple messaging. I think we have to just continue to remind everybody of the fact that, you know, whether you are going to work, whether you're at home, whether you're out with friends and family, you know, to the extent that people will want to do those things and socialize again when we can, you know, all of that is underpinned by the built environment. And I think it's really up to us to make sure that, you know, people's experience of the built environment, whether it's at home, at work, in a leisure setting, is a positive one. I think it's a huge, huge opportunity for that, and to be part of the rebuilding process of trying to return to our normal lives. I think there's a huge opportunity to be grasped. I think that particularly in forward-thinking local authorities, which I think Bill referred to earlier on, you know, there's a real understanding of the importance of that message. But I think we won't do it, to the points that have been discussed already, unless we find a collaborative way of working with partners that brings us together around shared objectives rather than drives us apart over commercial difference. So I think, you know, that challenge has to be grasped, and I think we can't afford not to.
Fantastic. Thank you. Bill, for you, what role should we play?
So I think some of this is about convening the stakeholders that are involved or affected. Because I think there's no point government ruling from on high. There's no point investors doing things that don't take account of what occupiers or the customers want. And we clearly need to think about local communities when we make decisions, because part of this is got to be good for society at a local level. I see some positives in terms of thinking about how residential operates alongside business space, operates alongside residential. This is about, people talk about place making a lot. Actually, in a way, I think this is about place mending. I think there's lots of parts of the UK where we need some visionary decision makers from the public and the private sector, just holding hands, working together, figuring out what's going to work for people, taking feedback from, you can do it through social media, but getting feedback about what good looks like. And I think we can get to a better place against the background of really what feels to me being a pretty poor track record of investing in the right places and the right locations that will be fit for purpose in recent decades. There's some hot spots or some sweet spots or some good things that have been done, but now is a chance to reconfigure how decision making works and to make it better and fit for the long term.
Fantastic. Thank you. Vivian, for you.
Building on what's already been said, I would like to see commercial real estate taking the lead here in creating this collaborative environment. We can champion it for the benefit of UK PLC and showing that we can be creative about our community, that we can do things differently, that we can be facilitators of good growth in the UK by virtue of the way that we're prepared to go about making compromises and taking a leaf out of the book of other industries that have adapted. So I'm very positive about the role that real estate can make in bringing about the bounce forward after this crisis.
Fantastic, thank you. And last but by no means least, Chris.
Always great to go last on the questions. Thank you for the opportunity, Sam. I'd agree with what others have said. I think if I were just to add a couple of things, the first, I think, is going to be the importance of flexibility of use of space. I think it's just going to become more and more important, so that, and that's going to take quite a leap of faith from planners. It's going to take a leap of faith from owners and users. We've already started to see good examples of that in terms of places being used for longer in a single day. I think that's, there's more to be done. And then this point about, you know, working together right across the various stakeholder groups, from citizens through to the owners of capital, through to the owners of existing spaces, plus the users. These are going to be, you know, different ways of working together. They're going to be really important. And we need to pull those things together to make quick changes in what will be a different physical environment over the next 2 or 3 years.
I think it's heartwarming, and I use that word more and more often when I talk about real estate these days. But really heartwarming to have this conversation, in the, you know, we've set out a position to show how real estate really touches all of us, whether we're a leader of an investment company, a landlord, or you know, me sat in my bike-filled office out in Sussex. We all own a little bit of real estate somehow, and it's really heartwarming to see everyone come together and say, look, this is part of us and we do need to work together. You know, the number of times you guys have talked about collaboration, holding hands, Bill, being radical and being visionary, and they are not words that ordinarily 5 or 10 years ago we might have talked about in this industry. But I think that coming together to want to do something better, to see what we can reconfigure to make good look really good, is really encouraging. And I hope that the government, Joe Public, landlords, tenants all around the world and the UK really listen to that and join up, and we can find a way to come out of this the other side better and stronger.
So, in the words of Emily Wright, so there you go. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the EG Property Podcast. And thank you too, of course, to our guests, Chris Grigg, Bill Hughes, Melanie Leach and Vivian King, for sharing their expert views and opinions. We will, of course, be continuing the conversation about the important role that the real estate sector, the whole of the real estate sector, has to play in the country's recovery from the coronavirus pandemic. And don't forget, if you want to keep up with all the latest news, views, analysis and research that the EG Group has to provide, sign up for all of our property podcasts and subscribe to Radius Data Exchange for unlimited access to all our content and comprehensive commercial real estate data.